Hello and welcome to Two Drinks In. Tonight we are at the Urban Chestnut in downtown St. Louis off Washington Avenue.
It's snowing.
It is snowing? No, it's
oh
not,
my
is
God,
it?
God, shut up.
It is snowing.
They have great windows here.
It is snowing right now.
This is bad news.
Well, my name is Dennis. I'm the best one.
No one else is convinced yet. What were your two drinks?
Tonight, my first two drinks were, I had the Hardwood Myth, which was a dark, smoky beer. It was pretty good. Not
too
my favorite.
Smoky.
A little too smoky. Diana tried it. And then my second beer was the Winged Nut, which sort of reminds me of Delirium Tremens a little bit. It's pretty good.
I am Diana. I had the some sort of Pilsner, which is fantastic. And my first drink was actually an IPA, which tends to be my go-to beer, which was fine. But the Pilsner is fantastic.
I'm Jen. I had two Vakla Pils because it's from Czechoslovakia, and I'm Czech. And I discussed that earlier, but now I need to say it while we're recording. So I'd like to point out that Dennis had a hardwood and a nut.
Back to back.
Front to back?
And I handled it like a champ.
You did handle that wood and nut like a champ.
He did, and he went
yes,
back for another nut.
I did.
He's on his third.
So what are we talking about tonight?
Well, we were thinking about talking about dating. Valentine's Day is right around the corner.
It is a week away from tonight.
And do we love Valentine's? Do we hate it? Are we having anti-Valentine's Day parties? Are we embracing it and buying chocolates?
Here's why I like Valentine's Day. Because there's a lot of funny sort of image Valentines that come out around Valentine's Day that amuse me. Like there was like Lost Ones.
From the TV show Lost?
Yeah.
You're talking about
like
cards?
There was a picture of like Michael Emerson and it said something like, I like you, you're not like the others. I think those types of things. That makes me laugh. That's the only reason I like Valentine's Day.
Dennis, do you like Valentine's Day?
I think in terms of romantic holidays, New Year's Eve is actually, to me,
more romantic
and more expectations.
More depressing if you're single.
And more depressing if you're single than Valentine's Day is. I'm not sure what the reason for that is, but Valentine's Day, yeah, whatever, who cares?
All right.
Never been a big fan.
Valentine's Day is more cheesy. New Year's Eve is more like reflecting on your whole life for the past 365 days.
Sure, it's a landmark.
Yeah, Valentine's Day to me has always just been about my mother bringing me something or giving me some ridiculous gift more than it has been about boys at all. Or
good
you know,
point. I'm going to get a $25 gift card from my dad.
Right.
Something to look forward to.
A little fancy cookie or something. Yeah. So Valentine's Day is just sort of meh. Yeah.
It's silly and it's commercial and it's stupid. And
even though this is my...
Even though that sounds really cliche to say.
This is my second Valentine's Day since being split up from my husband, but I have not been with a dude on Valentine's Day for like 4 years, 5 years. Because he had a trip that he went on right around this time of the year, and so we were never even together on Valentine's Day.
Did that upset you?
No. Because I don't care. It's a Hallmark holiday. I don't think I'd be, like I said, it's cheesy and it's like...
So if you were dating on Valentine's Day, what would you expect? Would you expect anything special, more,
no.
less?
No.
No. You wouldn't want to be taken to, like, you know, the best restaurant in town and given a teddy bear and...
Oh my God, no. No.
So you're not going to get upset about not getting
no.
a dozen long-stem red roses?
I mean, okay, one thing that I felt like I was sort of coming to realize at the end of my relationship was, you know, it's not that bad to sort of... find any dumb excuse to celebrate or dumb excuse to be like affectionate, but it's also if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. You should do it the next day or the day after. So,
do you have a flower of choice
to receive?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I've received flowers maybe once or twice in my entire life, and they've been like grocery store flowers. I'm not a big flowers person, though, I don't...
Does it make you sad when they die?
Yeah, it's like $60. I'm like, do you know what I could have spent that on that would still be with me today?
So you don't buy yourself flowers ever, either?
No, but I don't buy flowers, but like the $10 bushel or whatever at Trader Joe's or something to put on the table, because they're pretty, but I'm not going to spend $60 or $70 on flowers. It's ridiculous. I mean, if somebody wants to spend it on me, it's fine, but you have to, you know,
all right.
Not buy that instead of something cooler. Do you have a flower of choice?
What would be your something cooler?
Probably something nerdy.
I love all flowers. Right now I have tulips in my house because for some reason Deerbrooks was stocking tulips. So
they're springy. It makes
bought their entire. I think that's what it is. I think it's February, and February is the absolute worst month for me, and I just needed some spring in my house. So tulips it is.
What about you, Dennis? Do you have a favorite
flower?
Dennis
has a favorite flower.
Well,
what do you like to receive?
I have thought to myself that it would be cool
for a woman to buy you flowers.
I've,
yeah,
I've never been given flowers. I don't. Well, other than like, you know, a corset, with the pin on for prom or
boutonniere?
Something. A boutonniere or something. Like that. Yeah, right.
You could use one on that jacket, on your pinstripe/corduroy jacket with your farmer's shirt underneath.
I've wanted to buy boys flowers before. I totally get that.
Happening.
I mean, it's from a female point of view, I would buy a dude flowers. Absolutely.
I think the right. I don't know if all guys. I'm not a typical guy, but I think we would appreciate it for sure.
So sweet, and it's unexpected.
If you have a place, and you know, you're like, you want your kitchen to be kind of
well, thoughtfulness is just
fresh,
appreciated
pretty,
wherever it comes from. You know.
And, would you rather have flowers or steak and a BJ?
Well, is that is
all of the things, all of those, all of the above?
Of course, I'd rather have steak and a BJ.
Right.
Sure. But if she also gave me flowers.
Flowers over steak. I would have flowers over steak. Yeah, steak's boring.
Not to dive too much into anything. But like kind of last week, Jen was talking a bit about the emasculation and the infantilization of men and whatnot.
Man children.
If I may comment, you've known some shitty dudes in your life.
Oh, there's no argument about that.
I mean, you to have only been given flowers twice in your entire lifetime, you've just associated
I
with
I might be
some
lowballing that, but it hasn't been a lot. Like, not a lot.
I haven't been given a lot of flowers either.
To be fair, I've made it clear that that's not going to really, I'm not going to freak out and be like, oh my God. I'll be like, oh, that's nice.
Right.
Great. So I think they're just responding to that element of my personality too.
Possible.
But the first thing you said is also true.
Okay, sorry. I just, you know, well, I was just thinking a year ago or so, I was on a date with a girl, and I think we had dinner, and then we went to see a show, some sort of live show. I don't know what it was. It might have been like music or comedy or something like that. And then we had drinks afterwards. And she was just gushing about what a wonderful night it was and how she'd never quite had a night like that before. And my whole response was just kind of like, well, who are these asshole dudes that you've been dating?
I don't think it's fair to call them asshole dudes.
Well,
because, I mean, different situations bring you into a relationship.
Sure. This was a first date. And I just thought that's what you do on a date.
I don't think I've ever been on a legit first date.
Yeah, I was just actually thinking I've never been on a date.
That sucks,
like a
then,
real
doesn't
date.
It? Doesn't it suck?
No, the whole idea of
it actually
date
sucks.
Is terrifying.
I agree. I think it's the most awkward damn thing ever. And that's
all avoided at all costs.
One of the reasons why I refuse to do any of those sorts of date. I couldn't do a date. I couldn't do it. Like the first time you ever meet, having this super stress, awkward situation where you're like, am I talking enough? Am I not talking enough? Should I have another glass of wine? Is he judging me? Do I look fat tonight? I mean, it just sounds horrid.
I have a deep, deep-seated revulsion against trying to impress people. So I feel like on a first date, I'd be like, well, here's what's wrong with me. So what, do you got a problem with it? What are you going to do? Because I can try to be a little bit fake, but I'm not very good at it, so I feel like that's what first dates are.
Yeah, I just don't like the whole game thing. I'm pretty honest and straightforward, and
I think that you're reading way too much into, I mean, the listeners can judge, but I think No offense, but that just almost sounds like a dysfunctional view of dating. I mean, you go out, you mingle, you talk, you have a couple drinks.
I went on a date and I ate cheese like gangbusters, like I just did right here. Like, I just demolished this plate of cheese and meats and breads. Like, you can't do that. I'm like a mess.
Sure
I ate an olive and I didn't know what to do with the pit, so I set it on the side of this board. You can't do that on a date.
Apart from my own insecurities. Apart from my own insecurities, I'm going to be sitting there most likely hating the person sitting across the table from me. And feeling every awkward silence. It's going to be horrible.
Why do you know there's going to be awkward silences?
Because I'm not going to like the person across.
Why?
I just know.
You don't know anything about them, so you can't. I mean, when you're with somebody that you know, it's like, oh, so your mom this and that, because you know the story, and we have our waiters here real quick.
Metropolitan Brewing wants to say something.
We're being loomed.
You can say something.
Loomed over.
You can say something. What's up? No, you're fine.
We have a visitor. We encourage visitors to say hello.
Hi, what are you drinking?
I am drinking a Gilgamesh from Upland, which is out of Indiana. Peter Hale brought this beer over here tonight. Florian Cupland at Urban Chestnut was kind enough to allow us to come in and try a few different beers, aside from the Urban Chestnut beers, which are completely excellent.
Uh-huh.
But I was wondering, you guys have a bunch of food and beer on the table here. What are you guys representing? What are you doing here?
We're talking.
We represent ourselves. We're doing a podcast, and so we're trying to do microbreweries in the area, but then also talk about all kinds of bullshit and stuff too. But also talk about the beers and the food we eat.
What is your podcast called?
It is Two Drinks In.
Two Drinks In. Well, excellent.
He's got a microphone for you if you want it.
Well, thank you, sir.
Don't be scared.
We don't start recording until we've had two
drinks.
By the
way, I want the listeners to know.
Eventually, we get a little crunk, and we're like saying things we shouldn't. So that's where it gets a little bit more fun.
So let me ask. I mean, I actually also produce a podcast. So
do
I'm
you?
Curious how much
I was going to say he's got great microphone position.
How much post production do you guys do? I mean, are you going all live? Are you doing a lot of editing? How's it work?
We're figuring that out.
We're going to do as much live as possible because we think it's the most interesting, but we're going to cut out parts that are kind of inappropriate because we are drinking while we're doing it, and sometimes we get a little bit too loose-tongued. But we're trying to be as real and as honest as possible. That's kind of the whole deal. Which is
the idea, and this is great that I'm saying this in the middle of our first one that we're actually going to put online, is that we had conversations with people in bars where you're drinking, and then it's like you get really deep and you start saying these really great things, and you're like, I should write this down, I should tell people this, and so we're trying to have those great bar conversations and record them.
Excellent. Yeah, it can be hard to capture that kind of thing, I feel like, because...
It's forced.
For one thing, the audio environment is challenging. It could be said, you know, if you're using a mic that'll pick everyone up,
right,
you're getting all the background. And if you've got mics like this, everyone's real intimidated. Speaking of which, are you the audio man right here?
By default, sure. Yeah.
Okay.
It's my setup, if that's true.
Well, I mean, you've got a pretty nice setup here for, you know, like our podcast, we went for a year plus and we just literally recorded with like an iPhone microphone.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just set it on the table and make sure we're not in a loud environment. So.
Right.
So you guys, you got the soundboard going, you got the microphones, you got the laptop running. Does the laptop crash on you? Because we've had that issue before, I found.
It hasn't actually crashed on us yet, but sometimes we get a little bit tipsy and close everything out.
Before. Touch things we shouldn't.
Well, when the podcast is done and you hit the pause button and you save it, it sometimes it takes like a good couple minutes to, I don't know, render the file or whatever it has to do to save it into the right format. And sometimes you're like, okay, done, close, and you just almost deleted the last 5 hours of your talking.
Yeah, Dennis almost lost one
that happened
was like five
Sunday.
Hours on Sunday.
But I recovered.
But
you got it back?
We got it back, yeah.
Well, what are you guys' names? I'm Steve, I'm sorry.
Hi, Steve.
I'm Jen.
Jen.
I'm Diana.
Diana.
And I'm Dennis.
What's your name, sir?
Dennis.
Dennis, I'm sorry.
Like the menace.
I forget you're not wearing headphones.
You guys
so we
can hear yourselves really well in the headphones.
Yeah, and you can. I know.
Diana, you have excellent shoes on, if I recall correctly.
Thank you.
You walked in the door, I was like, those are some great shoes.
Thank you. They're a little dominatrixy. I like
so
it.
I,
a little
bit. I noticed you sat over here in the corner table,
nice
so I assumed that you were
them.
The same person, but I can't see your shoes right now, so not
100%. Thank you. I appreciate that.
What beers are you guys enjoying most from Urban Chestnut?
We, us girls, tend to like this Pils quite a bit.
The Pilsner was really good.
Yeah.
I was impressed.
I'm having
you, Dennis?
The winged nut.
Yeah. Dennis is drinking all genitalia beers.
Yes. Yes. I had the hardwood earlier.
I had the hardwood myth earlier.
Okay.
Yeah. These beers were chosen for me, by the way.
We just need the Volva IPA next.
The Volva IPA. I will down it.
I will devour that.
3 seconds.
Well, no. Go longer than that.
Okay, I'll start.
Just sip on it slowly.
I'll hum the alphabet while I drink it.
Oh, dear.
Well, the beer I wanted to ask you about was the Wolpertinger. So that's one that's toward the bottom of their board. Asking for I guess it'd be the wingnut on acid and give it a shot. But thanks for talking with me. Thanks for allowing me to
sit
down at your table here.
Do you work here or are you just like chilling here?
No, I live in Chicago.
Okay.
And I get down here occasionally.
Okay.
We were here at the Oktoberfest and we did a show with Florian, which was a really good time.
Okay.
And I think that they make really good beer here. I think this is going to be one of the kind of up and coming regional breweries.
Oh yeah.
And I like to get here whenever I can. So. Cool.
Well, I guess go ahead and cross promote a little bit. What's your blog? Or your podcast? Excuse me.
Our podcast is Beer Download.
Beer Download.
Ooh, sweet. I will listen to it. It's the only podcast
that pits beers head-to-head in a tournament-style competition to find out which beer reigns supreme.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, I see.
And I want to, leave you guys be and let you do your thing. I walked over because I thought, this is fun.
Yeah. Show
these people with microphones and headphones. But so
we have an extra one for a reason.
Two drinks.
Two drinks in.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, as right before, 3 sheets to the wind, right?
Right. There you go.
All right. Well, cheers, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers,
you too. Thanks for sitting in.
Let's throw
it. We were supposed to get a guest, and we didn't do it. Now we got our own guest.
We got Steve from Chicago.
We did good.
No, he had microphone placement down. Like, I think I feel intimidated.
I don't think you should feel intimidated.
No, it was good to have a little presence that knew what he was doing.
Mm-hmm. And he had the nice mellow tones. I could do the mellow tones, but I don't know if you guys would get sick of it or not.
I don't want to talk to Delilah all night. But if we can.
Delilah.
I actually thought it might be kind of funny to do one where we did that, where we did an NPR.
Oh, we should do an NPR.
Have we totally shot this first hour to hell, by the way?
The what?
I don't think we're
Do you know about NPR voices? You recognize that?
I don't know if there's like a way that they train people, but I know it's like this, and it's very quiet.
I feel
and very
like
soft. Yeah.
The sweaty balls segment on SNL was making fun of
me. Does it drive you insane at all?
A little bit.
Sometimes it does annoy me a little bit.
Yeah.
You know what really annoys me?
Well, you can hear every single...
Every time they smack.
Everything. They must have condenser mics. We're using dynamic mics. They must have condensers, obviously. And then they must get really close. And
is somebody else going to eat this?
No.
Okay.
I'm going to eat this little piece of cheese. It was really good. Smoked Gouda thing.
And they probably also...
in the state.
If anybody actually has any bass in their voice at all, I'm sure they digitally extract it. So everybody sounds nice and androgynous.
So should we start talking about dating again?
Let's talk about dating.
And one, two, three. So dating. Getting back to that.
Do you think that the person that you're with should make you a better person? And I mean that in two ways.
What if you're already the best person in the world?
You're not.
But I almost am.
This is what I meant by two ways.
The best person I could be.
I think... Well, and
but are you an incomplete person while you're single?
If you're an incomplete person while you're single, then you have no business being...
Well, I said that wrong. But, I mean, do you think
I know what
that
you mean. I wonder about that sometimes.
Obviously, yes. You need to be self-supportive, self-sufficient. You don't want to be needy and dependent in your relationship. But are we, as humans... as
social creatures?
Well, in terms of duality... Are we two sides? Do we need that to realize our full potential?
I have lots of answers to that question. I think that,
Did you see what's that? Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
No, I don't know what that
is. Got the Origin of Love song.
I don't know what that is.
Okay.
You can tell me what it is. What is it?
I'm probably not going to do it justice, and probably people are going to scream at me for getting it wrong, but basically it's an in the movie, Hedwig and the Angry Inch, there's a song called The Origin of Love, and it talks about how, you know, back in the original days, there's like these creatures of some sort, and they're like, they get ripped in half. And then they have to basically get put back together again.
So you believe in soulmates, or this song does?
The song just kind of believes that we are halves of something whole until we find our other half.
I'm trying to remember what philosopher... Oh, there was a philosopher that believed that too. And I can't believe I can't remember, but I'll look that up when I go home. But there was
that's
one,
what the whole, I mean...
Like, literally, with, that we are two halves.
With Pleas, without getting into the whole, like, marriage question that's going on right now. But that is sort of what marriage was originally the idea of, right? Is that two become one?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Originally? Like, original? Really?
Yeah, no, she's right.
What? No, it was a woman is a vessel to
romanticized. We've absolutely spine. Romanticized what marriage is.
Right. That's it. Never started as
this
like
whole
a,
love thing is actually kind becoming. Of a new modern thing. Yeah. I think that like if you go back through history, I don't think that love was nearly as important as we think it is now because they didn't have time for it. For one,
I'm
thing.
Not talking about throughout history. I'm talking about.
I don't think when marriage was first conceived that the whole point was. Two people becoming one and taking care of each other. First of all, there was multiple wives, so it was like it was definitely the women were supposed to be true to the dude, but he could kind of do whatever he wanted. So it really wasn't two becoming one.
I think we're getting very culture specific. I mean, I guess I'm just going back to like. If you want to go to like, see, I didn't really didn't want to get into this.
Well, you started it.
Just what I was trying to get into was the idea of being half of a whole was what I was trying to get into. And I think I remember from one of my classes that I took at my very Catholic high school, they were talking about that if you look to the original translations of the original words, like I can't remember the exact quote from the Bible, something about like God created man, God created woman and man, he created them, or something like that.
Okay.
It's something like that, but then if you actually analyze the original text from in the original language,
in Hebrew
or whatever it was, that those words have a built-in connotation of
being
he created a half, and then together they are one.
Well, here's okay. I don't want to. I mean, you're going biblical. I'm just going to go with personal experience that. When you're with somebody and then you lose them, it does feel like you've lost half of yourself, like you're missing an arm, there's a hole, whatever. But then when you're with them, you also feel like you've kind of lost part of yourself, too. Like, because you're not serving your own needs 100% of the time. So it's like I think it's a grass is always greener thing. Like, or maybe not a grass is always greener, but there's just pros and cons to both. Like, sometimes you are two parts of a whole, but sometimes you're also like, oh, well, what about this other thing that I used to do and care about and love that I don't pay attention to anymore, and have I lost part of me?
There was an episode of How I Met Your Mother that sort of joked about this, how, and once you become a couple, it isn't about the individuals at all anymore. It's like, what are we going to do? Or like, are we coming to this party? Are we going out to dinner time?
You can't tell, but I'm curling my lip.
But I mean,
in disgust.
In disgust.
You just notice by the words that these people choose.
You don't
to
think
use.
It's true that this is what happens, or you're just saying
once
no.
You get
I
coupled
don't think
up,
it should.
No, I think that
and,
I think
and
that
couples
that
have
is,
to hang out with other couples. They can't hang out
yeah,
with single.
I think
people.
That's what happens. And I, but I.
But you don't want it to happen.
No, it's not that I don't want it to happen, and it's not that I don't think that it should happen. But I don't think that there is. A good relationship does not diminish the individual.
In theory, but like if you have a full life as a single person, you do not have enough time in the day or the week to devote to another person. That's quite enough for a relationship. You know what? Like if you already have a full life, you. There's only 24 hours in a day. You got to cut something. Something has to go.
What about Jerry Maguire? You complete me.
I think, well, and well,
I hesitate to agree with that, but then I can think of a few people who I know that that has been mostly true for. Like, people who were, like, just kind of screwed up versions of themselves, and then they met their current spouse, and it's like, they, like you said, they become a better person. Does that person want to make me be a better person? I don't know if it made them want to, but it just sort of, like, evened them out in certain ways, or brought this balance to their life that you can tell is, like, a great thing for them. Like, well, the person that you used to be was okay, but now you're just so much better.
Diana phrased the question a little bit differently than I would have. Because there was a point in my life, this was several years ago, where I had the opportunity to maybe date two people. And I kind of had to pick. And one of them was awesome, and I could totally go out and have a blast with, and, you know, she would indulge all of my vices with me, whether it was staying up late, getting drunk, whatever happened to be. She was right there with me doing it. Did no judgment.
She joined you.
Sure.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And it was just awesome. She accepted me for who I was, and we had a blast together, and yeah, that was cool. And then there was another girl who I felt like she inspired me to try to be better. But I also felt like I couldn't do, maybe I couldn't get drunk as much, or maybe I couldn't stay up as late. Like, she made me feel like I had to be a better version of myself in order to be with her. Not in a coming from her way. It was all coming from me. But I guess maybe I put her on that pedestal.
Now, what do you mean by better?
Well, I guess for me
more
personally.
More responsible?
Maybe.
Because I think that's something that's inside of you. Like,
the other girl made me want to go to the gym more. She made me want to read more.
Do you know what I mean?
She,
well, no, but my question is, did you want to go to the gym more on your own and you weren't doing it? So
right.
she highlighted yeah. something that was inside of you. She didn't try to get you to do something that was not
yes.
already a part of you.
That's what I was
correct.
Gonna say.
No, right. yeah, and again, this
you
was,
see, but there's a difference.
But the and yes. these right, I wasn't trying. It was a better version of myself,
right, right,
not
right.
not a different
I'm just
person.
I'm just being specific.
Not a different person.
Right. But
and again, this
but
is all coming from inside
of me.
There are
people who go to the gym because they know that their spouse wants them to look hot or whatever, but they don't really want to go to the gym and they hate it and it's awful.
Well, that's
and it
not
sucks.
Cool. That's not cool.
No, but I'm saying, like, they're still trying to be a
that's
better
not what
person
I'm describing.
For them.
Right. What I'm describing is, you meet them and you're like, wow. Well, like in As Good as It Gets, when
you make me want to be a better
you make
man.
Me want to be a better man.
Can't you have both?
Maybe.
No.
You don't think?
I don't know.
I think that you can have both to a point, but like if you, just like if you want to be absolutely excellent at something, you can't be, being with someone can complete you or whatever we were talking about, or can improve you to a point. But if you want to bridge the gap of, I'm not going to say mediocre to excellent, but I'm going to say great to excellent. That's something that has to be done completely alone. That's why so many painters, I'm talking about like the most elite of any field cannot have, they're not, they can't be involved with someone because their love, their dedication is to their whatever, whether it be art, whether it be being a chef, whether it,
well, I'll
whatever.
Go ahead and be a chauvinist here for a second. Because that's what everybody expects from me, right?
Dennis hates women. This is the first podcast, so they don't know how much you hate women with all of your heart
right.
yet.
Well, Diana put that up on the website that I was a misogynist.
Chauvinist.
I didn't mean it in the way that you actually are one. I just
it was tongue in cheek.
Yeah, exactly. It is tongue in cheek. Yeah, it's just that's what you're going to be. That's what is someone could call you wrongly. That was the point. That it was sort of. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, while we're referencing movies or quotes or whatever it happens to be, we've all heard the quote, behind every great man is a great woman. We've heard that quote, right?
That's not accurate.
Okay.
We've
heard the quote, right?
Sure, we've heard the quote.
I don't agree with
it
either.
Okay. When you talk about being able to be married to your job or married to your other, don't you think, though, that that does apply a little bit more to women than it does to men? There are men that go out there and excel and are married, whereas there are fewer women who excel and still have to raise kids and stuff.
Well, we were talking a little bit last week. Weren't we talking a little bit last week about the differences between men and women? Or was that...
We've talked about it off and on.
The differences between men and women, biologically, mentally, whatever you want to call it, women tend to be more multitasking oriented, whereas a man will focus his energy on one thing.
I'm just saying, I'm not trying
to... Men can be married and work a lot, but you're really assuming a lot by assuming that they have great marriages and that their families are happy.
I guess I just feel like if you go throughout time and you list some of the great scientists or the great authors or the great whatever, many of them were married. And that seemed to work out fine for them, right?
I don't know. Do you have their diary? Do you know that they had a good marriage?
Plato married?
Who knows? Maybe they had miserable
lives.
Well,
you were actually...
I don't
like,
have
you
it
know,
all memorized, but I feel like...
Because I actually think that if you go throughout history, you'll find that most of the excellent men, whether it be... and I'm pulling on the things that I know, psychiatry, art, and philosophy. Those men were not in constant relationships with a woman. Most of them. Now, a lot of them had those brief, beautiful love affairs, like, you know, Beatrice and Dante kind of thing, where there was like this infatuation. But typically, the men were single.
Okay. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I mean, prove me wrong.
We didn't research this. I mean, obviously, I don't know.
Now, I will say that there is absolutely something to... Well,
was Einstein married?
Do what?
Was Einstein married?
Was Einstein married? Oh, that's a great question. I should know that. I'm pretty sure, actually, he was.
Did he have kids?
I don't know if he had kids. I'm pretty sure he was married.
The iPhone is going to tell me pretty soon.
Examples.
Most men in history were married.
I didn't say it. I just said if you look at all these great
people
throughout history. Because
they want to procreate, and they want to get it on every day,
and every night. Because women flock to successful men.
Einstein was married to Elsa Lowenthal.
That sounds right.
So he managed to do some awesome stuff while being married.
I'm not saying that it's 100% one way or another. I think that's part of the problem, is there's not a 100% one way or another. And we don't know when he got married, and we don't know how long it lasted. I mean, we don't know if he got married when he was 25 or if he got married when he was 45.
I guess a better way of saying it is that I don't think any one way to look at the world is good. And as a man or a woman, you can get so focused on your own narrow view that it's nice to have a counterpart that reminds you of other things, whether it's of your humanity or of your humility or whatever that happens to be. Someone that keeps you in check.
For a personal...
Someone that keeps you from falling off a cliff. I mean, I want to say that some of these men or women, whatever, some of these people throughout history that were great had moments of like... moments of depression where they locked themselves in rooms for like months at a time, and they had spouses see them through that. A lot of geniuses are also just whacked out in other ways, and so the loving support,
like Leo Tolstoy, is that how you say it? Tolstoy,
I think.
Tolstoy. Well, like, for a very personal example, in my opinion, of a man who I feel benefited tremendously from a woman being in his life was C.S. Lewis. And he had an incredible career before he got married, but it wasn't until he got married that I think that he actually had clarity, that he actually had any, and I'm not saying that he didn't have anything of value to offer before he got married, but it wasn't until he actually understood what it was like to be in love did he really have anything to say about religion. And I think he realized that about himself too.
Wasn't he an atheist for a while?
He was an atheist for a while.
Stephen Hawking is single, isn't he?
I think he's got somebody, actually.
Well, he's had girlfriends, but he's not married.
I don't know.
I mean,
about
and
that.
He is like kind of a special case because it's not like he's out there. he's got his, disability. So maybe that has some impact. I don't know.
By the way, quick little side note about Stephen Hawking.
I don't think it
does. If you ask most, physicists who their top 10 most influential people are, books they've read or people that they look up to, Stephen Hawking isn't on that list. He's sort of like a... He's sort of like a rock star, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But he's not necessarily within the community. He's kind of like, you know what I mean? He's kind of like the poser who's I mean, it sounds hard, trash talking a guy who's obviously has so many issues physically and whatnot. But I do think he does get some sympathy for those reasons. And really, I mean, he wrote... was it A Brief History of the Universe and or something about the nut? Or you know what I'm talking about at all?
No, I don't.
Well, his works are not that...
You hate women and people in wheelchairs.
This podcast is not going well.
Dating encompasses so many things. If we want to talk about, dating can be kind of a light thing, but I think that we went immediately to the heavy. I mean... Dating isn't about love. Love is something entirely different. I mean, let's just...
Let's get back to actual, dating instead of philosophers and scientists who have had wives versus those who haven't. Because also, this is not exactly a topic that any of us are experts on. I know I'm not.
On dating?
On whether, who has had a spouse, what that spouse has done for them professionally or, philosophically, whatever. Let's talk about the thing that I was saying about on Facebook, people... Okay, this is going to be a little bit significantly less heavy than what you were talking about before, but...
By all means.
People leave their pictures with them and their exes up on Facebook and then continue to, date and meet new people. And I don't mean one or two from an album 100 years ago, but, all their old profile pictures or all the couple, and it's that's weird.
Do you think that it's, say, 2 years ago, you were dating somebody, and you had a picture taken, and it was a cute picture of the two of you, and you put it up as your profile picture. Are you saying that as soon as that relationship is over, you should delete that from your profile history? Can you leave it up as sort of just a record of all your profile pictures you've ever had ever?
If you have one, two, three, whatever, but when there's, I don't know what the critical mass is, but when you have, I'd say more than five.
Well, it depends on what kind of person you are. Like me personally, I don't put other people in my profile picture because
right.
It's my profile. It's not our profile. It's mine. Now, if occasionally I'm with somebody in the picture, sure, that happens. But for the vast majority of my profile pictures, they're not going to be of me and another person.
I would agree with that.
I don't know. Mine are typically me and another person because I feel
it's consistent.
Yeah. All right.
But certainly, sometimes
just you and one other person.
But Diana keeps a variety though. On her, mm-hmm. it'll be her and a sister, her and a friend, or her and a sister, or her.
Yeah, it's not always just me and a dude.
Yeah, it's not. It's not. Yeah.
I just feel like your online presence is sort of like a statement of who you are, and if who you are is still 50% with your ex, then that says something. And I just think it's awkward to try to date when there's you and this dude making kissy faces.
I would never post a picture of me doing a kissy face. Well, do you have kiss? Did you have kissy?
No,
face?
I didn't have I had goofy stuff. I didn't have nothing romantic rolling around on the beach or anything. But
silliness. While we're complaining about Facebook relationships, may we also complain about?
Oh my God!
Public posts on each other's walls that should have been a text message.
Gross. I love you.
It should have been a text message.
So gross.
Have I told you I love you today?
You know what I mean?
Did I tell
you
I love
cute.
You?
Why wasn't that a text message? Why was that on a public? For everyone to see.
I really
see.
Like I'm coughing. I'm like choking right now. I'm going to vomit from it. I'm even talking about it. No, that was... I didn't do all that stuff. Never.
I mean, every once in a while, sure, it's cute. You forget. But when it's like... I don't know.
No one cares.
Thank you for my flowers.
No one
Thank
cares.
You for my teddy bear. Oh, he sent me chocolates again.
Oh my gosh.
Now, if it was something funny, calling them out for so it was really funny when you farted in your sleep last night. That's hilarious. go to town on that.
Do people put that stuff on there?
No, I've never seen that particular thing, but like a little bit of like ribbing, like, you know, some writing something that's not gushing. So anyway, I you probably noticed that I was texting. I was texting with a friend who just broke up with her significant other, and he wanted her to move. Well, first of all, he said he wanted her to move like halfway. No, it was like across the country. But then he decided he didn't want to, and I'm like, I don't know if I would ever move for somebody.
I would move for somebody.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. Mean,
does it matter where it would be? Like, or does it matter what the relationship is like?
It matters. The depth of the relationship matters. On a whim, I would not just like follow somebody across country. But if we were serious about one another, or if we were engaged or married or dating pretty seriously, I would absolutely move.
So you would follow the love of your life to
wherever?
Fort Worth, Texas.
Yes, I like Texas.
I'm sorry, residents of Fort Worth. Okay, let's see. It's like some podunk town in Alabama, or, you know, somewhere that's not close to anything cool. Or
yeah, I really would. Because I think that, yeah, that relationship is more important to me than whatever city I'm in. And that's actually a really hard thing for me to say, too, because I've never lived with it, or outside of... Probably, I mean, in 2 hours of where I was born, not for any extended period of time, but for the right guy, I would go absolutely anywhere. But the trick is the right guy.
I don't know. I mean, it's not just the location. First of all, I feel like St. Louis is the smallest I could ever go. If it was smaller than this, I think I might just, I'd rather die. And so I just don't know if I could do that.
Well, I guess what I want to say, too, is the thing about the willingness is I'm assuming also that the person that I'm with feels the exact same way about me and cares so much about me that moving me away from my family and my friends and everything that I love,
that's a big decision, and
he would
understand that.
Exactly. Which, that's the hard thing to find. And if you're with somebody that does understand that, yes, absolutely, I'll go anywhere we need to go. Because I mean, there's that level of real love. But if you assume the other way, that the guy's just like, you know, on a whim, I might get this job in Arizona.
Then he doesn't really give a shit about you.
He doesn't really give a shit about you. Exactly.
And then the other thing I wonder is, okay, so in this person's case, they are in the city that they grew up in too. So, you know, your whole family's there. All of your friends that you've ever known are there. So, is that one great relationship, does that outweigh the collective volume of all your other relationships? I don't know. I mean, I guess I used to think so, because it was like, when you're in love, and you just do what you have to do, and that's just the way the world works. And you, when you're in love, done. Finished. Go follow them anywhere. And I guess now I feel like, well, even if I love you, I could love somebody else. It's not that hard. So, I mean, maybe it's not hard for me, but, you know, to, you know, feel devoted to someone and feel fairly...
Yeah, and I guess there are so many other...
Connected to
there
them.
Are so many variables in any relationship where, yeah, how long are you going to be gone? Is this like a... Is this a five-year thing? Is this a permanent thing? Is this a six-month thing?
That is very
thing?
True.
I mean... Am I never going to see my family again? Are we going to be able to come home for Christmas? Are you a teacher at Harvard and we get our summers off? You know, I mean, there are so many things that you need to take into account in something like that. But the reason that my first reaction, without a doubt, is absolutely 100% yes, is because I am assuming that he cares so much about me that he's capable of really honestly and truly putting himself in my shoes and understanding what my family
because if
means
he's
to
not
me.
Like the greatest guy in the world, you're an idiot for considering
exactly.
moving in with him anyway.
Right
Fair enough.
Now if part of you too, and I think that this is something that maybe girls don't really want to admit, is that they're looking for an excuse to escape where they're at, like I think a lot of people maybe follow someone who they claim is the love of their life because they're looking for an excuse to get out of whatever situation they're in that's making them unhappy. And they just sort of blame it on, oh, I'm in love with this guy. But I think that most of the time that's not the case. That they're not blindly following this person that they're not sure about. It's that they wanted to escape anyway, and this is just this is, it's like a tipping point for them.
Yeah, because if you're happy in your life, it's going to be a lot harder of a decision.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wish I was not so attached to St. Louis, but I am. Dumb city.
I think it's where you're from is incredibly powerful, and I think I've especially grown up, and I think that this is something about St. Louis too, is most of the people our age, I feel like they hate St. Louis and they can't wait to get out, and it's actually kind of refreshing to hear somebody else say how much they love St. Louis and how much they don't want to live here.
How many people actually leave? Everybody stays here.
Well, I don't know, nobody leaves. Who wants Lots St. of people Louis, leave.
Oh, what's happening?
Can I have the one that looks like it's in a Greek glass?
Thank you. We just got some.
This is Calypso.
Different beers.
Of course it is.
Which is the chalice one? That's the apotheosis.
So it, what does that mean?
It's French.
So are you going to tell us what the names of these beers? We just got three different beers.
It's French.
This is not what I was expecting, but that's good because I like different things. I just want to know what it is.
That's Calypso.
I'm drinking Calypso now.
It's an IPA.
It's good. I don't discriminate against any beers. I pretty much love them all.
What's your beer of choice?
Well, I like stouts.
Yeah.
I mean,
they're so heavy.
I know they're heavy.
Don't think they're too heavy.
But then again, I don't get too drunk too fast, which usually is better. I don't know. They're just more flavorful. And it's also winter that I'm saying that.
Yeah.
In the summer, I would not.
You
be
don't
all
get
about
drunk
stouts.
Fast on stouts.
Because you sip them, like,
oh, okay.
Because, like, if you have like Bud Light or something, it's like water and it just like goes down my gullet and then I'm dancing on a table.
I don't know, I just, when
or
I drink
under
a beer
the table.
I want a beer to be refreshing, and I don't find stouts refreshing. Sometimes I want them to have, I mean, I obviously want them to have a little bit of depth of flavor and, you know, whatever, but stouts just, ugh. It's a lot. I went crisp.
I also like
crisp and refreshing.
I was on a major Hefeweizen kick for a while.
Oh, good.
But I've
Lord.
Sort of.
I hate Hefeweizen.
I've gotten off of that train.
Do you like Hefeweizen?
I don't really dislike any beer.
Really? Hefeweizen offends me.
Except for beers that suck.
Well,
I don't like those.
Because it's like a fruity.
No, it's the wheat. I don't like the wheat. Yeah, I don't like it.
It was like my gateway drug to other various kinds of beers.
Whatever this is has it slightly. I call it rotten pumpkin, and Hefeweizen's have it's rotten pumpkin flavored.
Okay, I do know what you're talking about.
Yes,
because,
you do. Mm-hmm.
No, it's bad ones, and I don't want to call out the one brand that I've had that I hated.
Call
that was
out.
Awful.
Call them out.
It was the Trader Joe's house brand of Hefeweizen.
Yeah.
It is
pumpkin.
Awful. No,
it's
it tastes
okay.
Like... No, I would say rotten banana, but rotten pumpkin's close enough. It was bad.
Yeah.
It's nothing like a good Boulevard Schlafly.
Do you not like that?
Rotten pumpkin flavored?
No, the one right now.
This is... It's subtle enough that it's okay.
Okay. Where are we at?
We were still talking about... We were talking about whether or not you would follow your... we were calling him the love of your life... To another city.
A very good, rewarding relationship. I brought it up just because I got a text from a friend who's going through a breakup with a dude who wanted her to move, but then said, no, don't move with me. But she thought that it was like, you know, obviously going to work out. And so, I don't know, I guess I just thought like, I can't believe you're going to move anyway because... I don't know if I could handle moving for somebody. So anyway, but since I got that text, I thought about it.
That you don't think that you could handle moving for somebody, is it because you feel like automatically you're the lesser of the two? Like you're the dependent one or you're the submissive one?
No, I think it's...
Because you're the one that
I think I could
something.
Move. There's a couple of cities I could move to. Chicago's one of them just because I know so many people up there. But I guess it's not that I'm the lesser, but... Even a great relationship where you are totally in sync and you're two halves of a whole, as we said earlier, is that the end-all be-all? Like, do I do anything? Even if do I go to Podunk Town, USA, if I really don't want to go, if I would rather be anywhere else in the world, is that one person enough. And I just don't think it is, because, I mean, as much as I can love one person, I will find that somewhere else. I know I will.
Well, I know we're talking about a very idealized two halves of a whole, and I've never been married, so I don't know what it's like to be married. But I've dated, and I've observed people who have dated, and even in many marriages, doesn't it sort of feel like, at least in dating situations and bad marriages, that it's not two halves of a whole, that it's one person always kind of digs the other one a little bit more, one person has the upper hand, one person has the, you know what I mean, and the other one's more of a follower?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's what I meant by when
I guess I wasn't thinking like in a marriage situation where I'm not going to stay. Like, if I'm already married, I'm not going to be like, well, let's get divorced. I'm just thinking more of like a relationship.
Although I had a pair of friends who described their relationship to me as they each felt like they weren't good enough for the other person. Now,
I don't think that's healthy either.
I was realizing that's open for some misinterpretation, but the point I think they were trying to make was every day they were excited about the fact that, oh my gosh, I'm with this person. They both felt that way.
What, everybody's different. Everybody wants something different. I don't want that.
I do. I don't want to be with somebody.
You don't think it would make you feel insecure?
No, because here's the thing, though. Like, I feel like where you should feel a little bit insecure. One, and he makes you feel he remedies that. So it's both. Yes, you feel insecure, and he remedies it immediately and continuously, over and over and over and over again. You constantly feel a little insecure.
I like feeling like, oh my God, we're so awesome together. Like, when in a dating situation, and I've not, it was kind of not a long-term feeling even in the relationship where I felt it, but it was just sort of like, we are clicked together like, you know, two links in a chain. And like
you could kick ass at charades.
Yeah, like high five. You're not better than me, but we are so equally awesome, and I like me, I like you, like, it's more of an, I like feeling equal. I want to feel equal.
See, I think that one of the things that people don't understand about love, or maybe this is just my own made-up thing, is that people think that love is like this long-lasting, enduring, always going to be their thing. And I think that if your love is actually going to be enduring, that you can't look at it that way. You have to look at it as 100% fleeting and in the moment. You know, the moment that you admit that you're in love with someone, it diminishes. And it's you can't promise someone that you're going to wake up tomorrow morning and love them. You have to actually wake up tomorrow morning and love them. So you both go to bed every night not knowing if you're going to wake up loving one another. But then the beauty is that you wake up and you do. But you have to reaffirm it every single day.
I don't know. I used to think of love as like a gut feeling, like butterflies. That's part of it, but it's not just that. It's a decision. And when you make a decision to sort of devote your life to another person, then you do love them, and you do know that tomorrow I am still going to love you. Even if I want to, like, murder you, I love you.
Abso-friggin-lutely. I think that when you said that love was a gut feeling, that's not really love, obviously.
That's lust.
That's lust or infatuation or a crush or whatever. And absolutely, love is the decision. It's the, I know you're not perfect, but I'm deciding to commit to you.
I agree.
That's love. There's lots of people you could love, lots of people, but you finally meet someone.
How do you decide to commit? How do you decide? But you can't. That's a decision that you have to make every single day. That's not a decision that you can make for 50 years. That's something that every single day that you wake up, you have to recommit yourself to that. You can't commit love endlessly.
You work at love. You work at a marriage.
But do you see what the difference? Like, you can't.
And that's part of the problem today. That's part of the reason why we have so many things in divorce is because people aren't. Sorry, but
no, I completely agree.
People aren't working.
Didn't want to get divorced because of this. Even though I wasn't 100% happy, it's like I made a decision. I'm going to stick with it. I think that people should do that.
You work. It gets rough sometimes.
No, but I think you're misinterpreting what I'm saying.
You don't just jump ship when it gets rough.
I'm not saying that you jump ship. What I'm saying is that you have to recommit yourself to it every single day. That you can't just say when you're on your marriage day, yeah, absolutely, I'm going to love you forever. Yeah. Every single day when you wake up, you have to recommit.
That sounds exhausting.
In order to do that, there has
got to be
doubt.
You don't get like a couple days of just coasting?
No. Everybody will go through periods. Love is like a wave pool. Or marriage is like a wave pool where it's up and down. You know, everyone is going to have a period where you don't want to be in there. You're like, get me out. I'm at the low point, but then you're going to raise up again. And so I don't think you can, like, recommit yourself with gusto every single morning. Like, sometimes you're like, I just need to get through this day. I don't want to look at you. Every single person I've talked to that's married will tell you the same thing.
Never been married. I can't really comment. I'm just assuming.
I don't think I've ever... Well,
I've never even lived with a person. I mean, not really.
Really?
I don't know. I mean, I've had people stay over.
Yeah.
But not like day in, day out. Like, oh my gosh, I can't escape them even if I wanted to. Mm-hmm. I've never had that.
Not even like shacking where it's like, okay, you have your own apartment, but you basically live here?
Not really. Not really. There's always that idea that... I mean, certainly, I don't think I've ever had anybody bring a toothbrush over. I don't think. I mean, I'm sure they brought little overnight bags or whatever, but they never put their toothbrush in my medicine cabinet. That never happened.
I don't know. I equate it to the wonder and the awe of, or the constant, like, whether or not you believe in God. It's similar to whether or not you believe in your mate or your spouse or the person that you're in love with. There has to be doubt. If there's not doubt, there can't be love, because you have to be constantly focused on trying to figure it out. Does that make sense at all?
I'm not sure.
I don't know. Maybe
my visceral reaction to those words are not
right. It doesn't match what my experience is, I guess. It's the best. And it could be different for everybody, you know?
I mean, don't you kind of find God infinitely
journey
fascinating?
Journey is not the same as somebody else's.
Well, I don't even know what this means, but just, I mean, even if there's any truth at all to the signs of the zodiac, I mean, they will say that some personality types need that daily reassurance, whereas other personality types, oh, yeah, you're fine, whatever. I'm a Leo, and supposedly as a Leo, I need, like, constant displays of affection. I need it. If I don't get it all the time, I start to have doubts. Whereas supposedly other signs are more comfortable just, yeah, silences or just a knowing, trusting, understanding.
I also read a book about birth order not that long ago, maybe a year ago, and it talked about marriage and roles in marriage and what people need and stuff like that and how birth order's related. And it, like, blew my mind how spot on it seems. So, you know, like, I feel like I'm an oldest, and I know you're not an oldest.
I'm the middle child.
You're the middle.
I could be with anybody.
But there's probably different ways that people, you know, the way you're raised, the culture you're raised in, the birth order, the, you know, male-female maybe. You know, there's a lot of...
male-female
I
maybe.
I said that for your benefit, even though I don't
there's
completely
There's no difference
agree
between
with
men
it.
And women. They have the exact same hormones.
I didn't say the hormones were the same. But anyway, this is a different topic. But there's a lot of things that go into it. But my personal experience isn't like that at all.
Isn't
like what you described.
Isn't constant fascination.
Every single day feeling doubt and having to reaffirm your love for somebody every single day? That sounds whoa.
I feel like it's almost the opposite.
What do you want to do? What do you want to say? Every month? Every week? I'm just saying every day is like an example of what I'm trying to articulate. But I mean, if you want to reaffirm it every month,
some people talk about the idea of a comfortable silence,
yeah,
where you
I
can
feel
just
like,
sit with someone and not feel like you have to say anything.
I'm not saying that every day you have to buy them chocolates, but what I'm saying is every day you have to appreciate them.
Okay, here's how I felt about it, because before I got divorced, I thought I will never get divorced. I would never initiate a divorce. It's just not something that is on the table. I felt like, you're stuck with me. I can do whatever I want. I can say whatever I want. And it wasn't like you did whatever you want and said whatever you want. You know, there was still respect and all that and whatnot. But I also felt like you were just like sewn together. We are Siamese twins now. And it's not like there's any choice in this. Just because I was coming at it from I am not a person who gets divorced. There's nobody divorced in my immediate family. Like, this doesn't happen. So we are together. We will, the ship goes down, we're both going down with it. Like, mm-hmm. So it really wasn't a reaffirmation or a question.
I'm not in a successful relationship right now. Well, so I guess it's not, I'm not judging one way or another, but I think that there has to be doubt in order for a relationship to succeed.
Well, have you heard that because of modern life expectancies, that people actually need 3 mates throughout their entire lifetime? Have you heard this at all?
Only because I think we've talked about it before.
I don't know if there's anything to it or not, but the idea is that, you know, a lot of our cultural traditions are based on sort of the idea that you didn't live much longer than 40, you know?
Right.
So you got married young and you stuck through it and you cranked out some kids and you died. Where suddenly we're living to like 70, 80, 90, 100. So now it's sort of like you are a different person when you're in your 20s and early 30s versus when you're in your 30s and 40s versus when you're in your 50s and 60s.
Oh, yeah.
And so maybe you need a different person for every one of those eras of your life. Or if you're really lucky, that person evolves with you. I don't know. But that was something that I read in an article that we need 3 great lovers for our lifetimes. Someone who, like, when you're in your 20s, when you just want to bang and it's all about the lust, and then when once you start procreating, then you want someone that can support you or that financially you work together. Like, when you're in your 20s, you want to work together physically and the excitement. And then when you get like your late 30s and 40s, then you need someone you can work together with, more of a business partnership.
But in theory, if you're both at the same stage of life, I mean, were we talking about it was with somebody and we were talking about the Silence of the Lambs, where the guy's like, "I'd fuck me," like.
Right.
What if there's somebody who is like you, and at the same times where you just want to be partying and wild, like, in your 20s, in theory, when they grow up, they will be just as financially responsible as you, and so why do you need different people
to fill
those different roles when every single person can be those different people at different points in their life?
I feel like effort is what has been removed from the equation.
Yeah, you were just fighting me on effort a few minutes ago. You were just saying that you don't need to reaffirm it every day. So,
maybe we're arguing semantics, but haven't you ever heard stories from, like, people that are our grandparents' age where during the courtship, oh, you know, your great-grandfather or whatever, he asked me out every day, and I said no every day, and then, like, one day I gave in, you know what I mean? You hear stories like that where the guy tried over and over and over and over again, and the girl held out and held out and held out and held out, and eventually... You know what I mean? And they got together and they were married for 60 years. Whereas in today's age, if you try to go after a girl and she says no, then you're a stalker creep to continue to try, right?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think that's really...
That was back when
But haven't we heard these stories like, oh, you know, your grandpa wore me down. But can you imagine in today's society someone saying, I'm going to wear that girl down. One day she'll be mine. You know what I mean?
I wouldn't mind somebody trying to passively wear me down.
A problem.
Not like stalking, and not like, you know.
If you take out the creepy, the creepy factor.
But I think we put a lot of faith in that gut butterfly moment, and not as much faith or respect or in the effort of the courtship. Like, he tried every day. He put a flower on my porch every day for a year. That was courtship, or whatever it was. Whereas now, do I feel butterflies or not? Oh, no butterflies. Done. You know?
I don't know. I think that back in the day, people had fewer people to choose from, and so it was more like a...
Inevitability.
It was more of like a business decision and like, will this work? And
But, I mean, can't love potentially grow out of making that, you know, it's a, if it's more
it
a decision.
It depends on what kind of love you're
You choose to love somebody, even maybe they aren't perfect. And you're like, you know what, I'm just gonna love you.
I still agree that you choose to love somebody. I think, though, that you can, people are more likely to not, I don't want to say settle, but they're, back in the day, you just made allowances for certain things, and you got over certain things, and now that we live in a more of like a me, I, individualist society, and you can just meet more people, and it's acceptable to stay single longer, you can hold out for somebody who is a little, who gives you a little bit more of the gut reaction, and that you also...
Okay, we've got about an hour. Do we want to switch topics, or...
Well, yeah, I think we should switch topics.
Should we press pause and regroup?
I think we should press pause.
Okay.
Okay.
But it's more, but it's interesting to disagree and disagree on actual opinions. There's so many straw man arguments where it's like, well, you're a conservative. You want all women to stay home and not have jobs or, you know.
That would be kind of nice.
You hate gay people.
I'm kidding, by the way. Go have your job.
You know,
I don't care.
So it's easier to shoot down a false argument.
I would, for the record, I would totally be somebody's, or what's the opposite of a sugar? I would have a sugar mama, is my point. I would totally, I would be a stay-at-home dad.
Are you recording?
Yes.
Oh, goddamn.
I.
How did this happen?
Fully admit, if I found the right woman that just wanted to be a career woman, and she wanted me to raise the kids.
Can you do laundry?
Yes, I can do laundry.
I don't know.
I can do laundry if I'm getting paid for it by my husband or by my wife.
Do you do your own laundry now?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm a bachelor.
I was wondering why there was a question. Yeah, I kind of figured.
I just don't see you as like a laundry doing guy.
Laundry is the easiest thing to do.
Oh, you know, do you know the thing about laundry is it's actually not an easy thing to do.
Okay.
Whoa, wait. You think it's easy because you know how to do it. I think it's easy because I know how to do it. But you would not believe the number of freaking people that do not know how to do their own damn laundry.
Well, I take all the shirts to the dry cleaner.
I don't separate my white collars.
You don't have any friends who didn't do their laundry until they were like 25.
Just because they didn't work.
And even now, they're still not very good at it.
The three buttons you have to press. How do you be good at it? How do you be good at pressing three buttons?
Well, that's my point. Because you know how to do. You don't have any friends that don't know how to do their laundry.
I don't think I have a single friend left.
I have at least half a dozen friends who are terrible at doing laundry. Because they know how to work a
VCR?
I think...
Or a microwave?
Some people had their parents did it for them. Like, I started doing laundry when I was, like, 6 years old.
We were spoiled to a certain degree because our grandmother, we had a grandmother that lived with us. So it was kind of like having two moms. So
bitch did not do my laundry.
She did mine.
That's because she did your laundry and she did Dee Dee's laundry. But us, the middle, forgotten children, she did not do my laundry.
I was the best one. That's probably why she did my laundry.
Well, how do you explain Dee Dee then?
This is another point where I want to put in a scowl face.
Because she,
but I can't do that.
She probably reminded Grandma the most of me.
You're out of your damn mind. No, whatever. Grandma didn't do my laundry.
Wait, so you were spoiled, so therefore that's a reason why you might not know how to do your laundry?
No.
But you do
know
how to do it.
The whole spoiled point, where I was going with that was, until I lived alone by myself, I thought that you were supposed to wash a towel after every use.
You are still.
You are still?
Oh, I do. I don't do the whole, oh.
Do you let your towel dry out and use it like a few times, right?
No, I don't.
Most people do, though, right?
I am a wasteful,
a week
horrible
or two
person, and I love...
When it starts smelling, then you wash it.
Well, ew, smelling to what degree? No, they never smell. My towel never friggin' smells. I was joking about smelling to what degree. No,
my towel smells like
the smell I'm talking about. It's not body funk. Like it just it,
no, no,
a
like
wet
a mildew
towel
smell.
Can get a mildew smell. Sure.
I never pay that much attention.
I wash my towels every time they're used.
That is ridiculous.
It's not ridiculous. They're lovely and they're fluffy and I love them. And I have my own damn house and I pay for that shit and I want fresh, clean towels every time.
Fine. I'm lazy. I don't want to wash my towels every time. I don't wash my... I wear my jeans for like a month sometimes before I wash them.
See, that doesn't bother me nearly as much as not having clean towels. I'm eating.
How often do you wash your sheets?
if I had a perfect life, I would wash my sheets once a week.
You don't wash your sheets on a weekly basis, yet you use a different towel every day. You sleep on your sheets.
Okay,
you're
well,
on them for 6 to 8 hours
not,
a night.
Not exactly.
You use the towel for 2 seconds.
When you're clean, when you're at your cleanest,
right.
When you're at your very
sweat
cleanest,
in your sheets. Wet.
That's when you
I don't,
you,
well,
you dry
I don't,
off when you're at your
I,
cleanest.
I don't
on your sheets, you've got...
Those are way dirtier.
No, and especially if you do stuff in your bed.
Well, I don't... I have, I'm, my you know sheets are not... Well,
you don't do stuff in your bed?
This just got awkward.
You don't need a boy to do things in your bed.
Hey.
Just so you know.
I don't wash my sheets. Ideally, I wash my sheets once a week. It doesn't happen. But
I agree.
Ideally, that's what I do.
Ideally, I wash them once a week. Sometimes it's once every 2 weeks. But I also...
But here's,
that's the
okay,
same
but
schedule for
to,
my towel, too.
You have to admit there's a certain degree of ease in washing your towels versus changing your sheets.
Get two.
I do have two sets of sheets, but it's just, I don't know, there's a whole, it's a lot more involved than
it's a little
doing a load
more
of towels.
Involved. It's not a lot more. You
it's
don't have to devote
making the bed
half an
does
hour
suck.
To it.
Making the bed sucks.
Mm.
It sucks.
It's not that hard.
It's not hard, but it sucks.
If
this was going to be
similar.
Our political segment.
What are we talking about?
Were we gonna do politics? Were we gonna do Ron Paul? How he's like?
Oh yeah. I want to do Ron Paul because I want to understand why you guys don't like Ron Paul. I want to really talk about
I like
the reasons.
Ron Paul.
I really should have done homework before this segment.
No. I don't. I think that's better because most people have not done their homework about Ron Paul.
Okay.
So let's talk about why people don't like Ron Paul, or they like him to a point, but then they back off of him because they're afraid of his foreign policy. Or they're afraid of, you said it was the Department of Education.
That's one thing. He wants to get rid of the IRS. Or is it the IRS or the Federal Reserve or both that he wants to abolish?
I think he wants income tax to go to zero. He wants to go back to the gold standard. And he wants to get rid of the Federal Reserve.
Yeah. That's not going
to
happen.
And he wants gays to be able to get married.
Yeah, so when he said, when he talks about
And he wants to legalize
things,
pot.
Yes, all great things.
And
when he talks about those things, I'm like, you're great.
He'll let you drink
more
raw milk.
That.
That's what mom's going to vote for him because of that.
But do you see how the same hands-off philosophy that applies to your social situation is the same philosophy that should apply to your financial situation?
What about your military position then?
Well, here's, I don't know. There are people that I cannot, as a single human being, keep track of every damn thing happening in the world.
Name the people that you respect that don't like Ron Paul.
But there are people...
By name.
Who I read.
Who?
Who I read, whom I read.
It doesn't matter. Who do you read?
That, who
that,
I read. It is,
who
that is
do you
correct.
Respect that are...
Who I read.
Because it's
smarter
not that,
than
it's
you
the subject, not the object.
Are terrified of Ron Paul's
who I read,
policy.
Who is the subject?
Who I read.
I read whom? I read the works of whom?
Maybe not. No, it is. It's who. Don't overthink it.
Is there an implied
Don't
of?
Don't overthink it.
Anyway. That have serious concerns about his foreign policy.
Who?
And so when I think to myself, well, if they've got serious concerns about his foreign policy, maybe I should.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want to say who.
Foreign policy and economics,
I'm kind of
to
pulling
me.
I'm pulling a Sarah Palin right now, and... I've had a few drinks. I know
betcha.
That I know that I read stuff, but when put on the spot of like, well, what magazines do you read?
No,
I'm like,
no Denny, I'm not being
that
like,
was a perfectly valid freaking question, so don't even go there.
I'm
second of all.
But I am I'm doing the same thing. Do you question my intelligence because I'm doing
no.
the same thing she's doing?
No, but
I'm kind of drawing a blank. I know
you know that it was different for her.
No.
Victor
it's not,
Davis
I'm not,
Hanson. I like Victor Davis Hanson.
No. Okay. My point is just that...
But I don't know if he specifically wrote about the foreign policy issues or not.
Foreign policy and economics are both global, and there is no way to get out of it. There is no, like, oh, we all have our own homestead out in the wilderness, and we're all, you know, just... We're isolationists. We just worry about ourselves. That doesn't exist anymore, and nobody can pretend
well,
that it does.
What a Ron Paul supporter would try to do is they would try to make a distinction between being non-interventionist... and being isolationist. There's a, and they would say there's a difference.
I would definitely get behind being non-interventionist and being not being isolationist. I don't think Ron Paul is that. He wants to pull shit out of everywhere.
Right. And he has said as much that if we just left them alone, they would leave us alone. And I don't think that's true.
No.
There are people out there that hate us no matter what. no matter what.
I don't even know if it's hate us. I feel like this is getting into, there are people who make money off of Al Qaeda and that movement, and they get their power trip off of it. It's not even about hating us. I think on the higher levels, it's about, it's like a machine. It's a business or whatever to them, or it's, you know, it's the way that they become famous. It's their keeping up with the Kardashians, you know, like they have a reason to get other people to do that. So maybe those people are easily brainwashed or whatever, but there's always going to be people who want to attack us for whatever reason. I completely agree with that. We are not, that's not going to go away. We can't avoid it.
At the same time, I wonder, and maybe this is just me being too naive, but I wonder, because, I mean, Barack Obama ran on very, hey, let's not mess around with the world kind of stuff.
And then he started killing terrorists.
But once he got in the office, he started acting kind of like George Bush.
Oh, yes. That is one reason I'm supremely pissed.
But what it makes me wonder is, well, maybe there's shit the president knows that we don't know. Maybe like when you're just a civilian, you're like, this is bullshit, this is bullshit, this is bullshit. But then once you become president and they bring you into the room with like the guy smoking cigars and tell you what's really up, you're like, oh, well, yeah, you're right. Maybe we need to do this.
My friend Adam has told me, I don't think he'll ever listen to this, but if he does, it'll be funny that, you know, there's guys under the White House with cigars that run everything, basically.
There was a comedian that did a joke about that. Yeah, I forget the name of the comedian, but it was like, you know, you become president, and then you go to this room.
You're just
and
a
it's,
puppet.
It's a dark room full of guys smoking cigars, and they just say, roll the footage. And then, like, there's a footage of the JFK assassination shot from an angle that you've never seen before.
Like, right. You do what we say.
And, yeah.
I think that there's something, too, that we are not electing a king. We are electing a president.
And I say that all the time, too. But also, really quick, I haven't verified this yet, but on the radio tonight, someone was talking about how the president doesn't actually have highest level security clearance. That there are people that have higher level security than the president.
I think that's a good thing.
And then if the president
that's my point. I think that we've given the president this sort of like esteem isn't the right word. What's the right word that I'm looking for? This level of like whatever. He's
king's
not
a good
king.
Word. He's not a king.
He's not a freaking king.
And he comes and goes every 4 years. Whereas these agencies
right. That's
exist.
What I was gonna say. It's a
and
good
they
thing
have to have some continuity.
He's only in there for 48 years. He's very politically driven. I kind of like the idea of somebody who isn't. Well, I mean, it's
even if that someone has secret assassination squads throughout
the world.
The
dark side of the coin is that they have like a evil agenda, or you know, that they can do whatever they want and they're on a power trip themselves. But on the other hand, I mean, the president is more likely to have a very political, twisted, self-serving agenda than some secret guy.
Or I mean, how much briefing can you get? Even in 4 years, where there are people that spend their lives researching one terrorist organization, and there's hundreds of people, and they each have their own focus, how could you pour that information into one man and expect him to make all of those decisions?
And learn it all within that four-year span, and if the president does overturn every 4 years,
so
it's going to be a new guy to relearn everything?
I do wonder, as Pollyannish as perhaps Obama was as a candidate, maybe he got into office and his advisors were like, all right, here's the real story. And he was like, oh. And that's why he's acting the way he's acting. And maybe Bush isn't the asshole we all thought he was. Maybe there was some stuff that actually...
Certainly Obama has seen some things that we haven't seen. On the flip side of that, I will say that, to a certain degree, I agree with Ron Paul, though, that there is a certain amount of blowback. And... We're in the Middle East not just because we want to protect ourselves from the terrorists. They have oil. We need oil to keep our society functioning. We do some things to keep our access to that oil that are probably not entirely ethical and piss off people who live over there. Like, that can't be removed from the equation either. Can't change. That right now, I mean, I would love alternative energy to, you know, take over.
The one thing I would say about oil, when all these people, you know, scream about no blood for oil, whatever, oil is a big goddamn deal. I mean, you really can't overstate that. It really is.
Everything would screech to a halt if we didn't.
And I think some people live in this bubble where, like, oh, you know, it's just people want to make a profit, or, you know,
Oil has one of the lowest proper percentages by industry.
Oil?
Yeah.
I thought that the oil companies made a huge profit.
No,
the oil
don't.
Company themselves
percentage,
does.
Percentage. I'm talking about percentage. Their profit percentage is one of the lowest profit percentages.
Oh, because they sell so much that by volume they make a huge
by
profit.
By volume they make a lot of profit, but percentage-wise they don't make that much profit.
But it's a giant deal. And I'm not sure how far I'm willing to go with this, but it just might be worth going to war for. I mean, no. Really. I mean,
I'm not saying that it is not.
That is why, by the way, that a lot of people don't talk about this particular aspect of the bombing of Pearl Harbor. But oil was huge. I mean, Japan, as an island nation, didn't have much natural resources. They saw that they had a finite supply of oil. They knew that if they wanted to wage any kind of long-term war, they were going to need to start, you know, invading some of the islands around them and to get at the oil that they had. And they knew that America's navy would get in the way of that. And so, because oil was so important to them, that's why they awoke this sleeping giant. They wanted to knock us out to keep us from fucking with their oil supply.
Okay.
Really is a huge deal. People act like, oh, if we would only just, you know, put more money into wind turbines and solar panels, and by all means, please do, but it's not even close to ready to replace oil.
No, I agree that it's not. I do think that there's a lot more that can be done. I think that there, whatever the solution is going to be, it's not going to be wind. It might be solar, because that is
it's still
present.
Subject to seasons.
But no, I mean, even, yeah, because there's less
it's
sunlight
subject to location
day.
And season. There are certain places on the planet that are not going to get as much sun, just because of where they're at. They're not going to get as much sun. And then obviously,
so
if
those places are going to supplement with something else. Those places will supplement with wind, or will supplement with
right. But that's
gas.
But that's the problem with every alternative energy source so far, is none of them. In certain isolated areas, the wind is great. In certain isolated areas, the sun is great. But nowhere is it always great all the time. Where people live, and then how, and then also transporting it. You have to get the, I mean, you could have, in Death Valley, you could have all of these solar panels, and that's awesome, because Death Valley is just getting hit with sun, like, pretty much 24/7, 365. But then, even if Death Valley is getting all kinds of this great solar energy, how are you going to get that energy to Missouri?
What's easier to do? Well, I don't actually know the answer to this, but it just seems intuitive. How do you transfer energy from Arizona? Well, how is it harder to transfer energy from Arizona to Missouri than it is to go to the Middle East, drill, get the oil out of the ground, refine the oil, put it in tankers, ship it overseas? I mean, isn't that like a way longer chain of
oil
supply?
Oil is the energy source. You can bring the oil to Missouri and then create the actual energy event in Missouri. Whereas a solar panel in Arizona creates the energy event in Arizona, and then electricity is only a carrier of energy. It's not a source of energy, and it's going to deteriorate over distance.
So the issue is that the technology hasn't caught up or hasn't developed enough to be able to capture it in one place and transfer it to another. I think the technology will get there, hopefully. I think that's why I think
or
we should put money into researching.
Work.
That too.
You could walk to work.
I'm all for
horses?
Better. I am all for better public transportation. You know, all of these NIMBY people that don't want to have the Metrolink or whatever you want to call it.
When it was on the ballot, was it last year or 2 years ago? It passed by a huge margin to put more money or not. It was either to not close or to build more Metrolink stations or something like that.
I do listen to 97.1 a lot, and one of the guys, is he the owner, or I forget, Dave talks about him all the time, but he came on the radio, I think Alan, is his name Alan? I don't know what his name is.
Okay.
Jeff Allen.
Jeff
Allen,
okay.
Right? He came on and was like, look, we need better public transportation. Like, I know as a conservative radio station, you would expect me to be against any kind of tax at all. But he's like, no, this is why we tax things. It's a little bit of, you know, public effort, a little bit of contribution from us all to have something that we really need. I mean, we want to be a respected metropolitan area. You know, you go to any major city, they've got, I mean, it's embarrassing how bad our public transportation is in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
It's compared to any other legitimate city. And if you want to attract businesses, if you want to attract entertainment people, they want to know what your transportation is
right.
going to be like. And how are you going to get a giant factory to build somewhere with shitty public transportation?
You're not going to get anybody here to disagree,
They're going to want those low-cost workers to be able to come in from wherever, maybe not...
See, well, I'm going to disagree with that, because I don't think...
Who wants to commute for an hour for a factory job?
Nobody. And I don't think that they... But what's wrong with somebody walking two blocks to their factory job? Why aren't we promoting that?
You'd have to build a factory and then build a town around the factory.
Well, yeah. I don't think the public transportation is this, like, magical answer to all of our factory needs.
Well, not necessarily factory needs, but, like, somebody to work at Starbucks, somebody to work at McDonald's, somebody to work at the gas station. Like, not everybody just lives right by where they work.
Well, I think what I'm trying to bleed into a little bit is one of the things that I think that people... When we think about the difference between, like, Ron Paul and Newt Gingrich, for example, when you compare the two of them, Newt Gingrich, there's been this analogy to, like, our government is running off a cliff. Like, everybody's been saying the same thing. Like, we're going 90 miles an hour off a cliff, and nobody's denying that where we are right now, our gross national, what is it? Our
GDP.
GDP is now at 100, what
it's something like the interest on our debt is equal to our GDP
or something
like that.
It's the tipping point. We've reached the tipping point. And so what we either need, we don't realize that we don't need somebody to drive the bus off the cliff better. And like Newt Gingrich, I think, would be a great driver of the machine that we've built because he's been in politics forever. He would be a fantastic freaking driver.
We need a course correction.
We need somebody to literally... slam on the brakes, spin the wheel, and go the opposite direction to even hope with everything that we have that we're not going to go off the cliff, because we are going off the damn cliff. Like, it's not a joke. We are absolutely screwed, and we're in complete denial.
Do you think that some of the course correction that's needed is going to cause... Here's the thing. I feel like the general public wants the course correction, but if it causes them any personal inconvenience or pain, they don't want it.
It's coming. It is coming, whether they want it or not.
I think it's going to be impossible to implement
until there's like another Great Depression.
Well, then that's why I almost think
we're doomed.
We're doomed, and I almost honestly, truly think that if it doesn't matter, like it's sort of like you've been gambling all night, and and you're just like, well, screw it, and you put all your money on one thing and you don't care. Like, that's where we're at right now, because you've already invested, you're down, whatever, fuck it, I don't care.
But then there's still people who make $500,000 a year who pay less in taxes right now than they ever have before.
Big fucking deal.
But we're arguing about 3 percentage points of a tax, and they're like, no, I will not pay 3 percentage points of a tax more. And we're like,
exactly.
You have to worry about being in the ditch in a few years. Like, the 3% tax is
nothing. But people, that's the conversation that's not being had. And that is the difference between, I mean, I'm not saying that Ron Paul is this perfect magical candidate, but what I'm saying is he represents a conversation that is not being had.
Oh, I agree with that.
He represents something that is not just driving the bus off
the
cliff slower.
What is big picture wrong?
He's big picture. He's, okay, guys, really, we have to make massive changes. And we're not talking about the massive changes. We're getting caught up in bullshit like abortion and tiny little tax changes and, like, all of this nonsense bullshit crap, when what we have to do is look at the fundamentals. We have to go back to the beginning. And what, I mean, that's not the conversation that's being had. That's the point that I want to make. And that's why I'm so irritated when people get so caught up in, well, Ron Paul doesn't like the Department of Education. Okay, well, honestly, back up a second. Zoom out. Take an aerial picture of this country. And the education department is effed. And you cannot fix it at this point. It needs to be abolished and restarted in a different way.
Well, I disagree that it can be fixed. I do think that it needs to be redone. But his solution, him saying,
you disagree
the department
that it can or can't be fixed.
It can be. I think him saying there's something wrong with it, let's get rid of it. It's like, well, no, let's build it, rebuild it from the ground up.
What
that's
I don't think
fine.
People realize
okay,
is we
yeah.
don't have time
so it can't,
for
it. It can't
we
be fixed from within slowly,
for
this, gradually.
No, tiny little incremental
we
change.
Need to blow it up and start over.
But he wants to get rid of it entirely and not replace it with anything.
I don't. I
like,
disagree
no,
that he doesn't want to.
National
I think.
Standards.
I think he might be a little too idealistic about what it would get replaced with. I think he believes in like the goodness of man and stuff. Where a lot of people are maybe more pessimistic about that. Like he talks about churches and charities and
I agree,
your fellow neighbor and you know you could. You
not
could, I mean,
realistic.
Maybe that's not being realistic. But in his mind, it's not demolish it and then just let it not get rebuilt. But it can't get. It's too bloated. It's too self-perpetuating to try to fix it from within.
That's what
I was
saying.
It has to get demolished.
It's very sweet to think that things can happen incrementally, but we really literally we do not have time for incremental tiny little changes. Things have to happen big and they have to be wide sweeping and they have to be serious, and it can't be little bullshit bantering back and forth about crap. It has to be real fundamental change. And I think that he represents that.
And
where nobody else is.
Even the military stuff. I've heard people make the argument, well, how much of a military are we going to have when we're broke and we
right,
can't
exactly.
afford one anymore? So if we drive ourselves into a ditch, well, then how are we going to be paying for planes anyway?
Right.
So at least if we can get our financial... I mean, because wars for most of the century has been less about professional soldier fighting professional soldier and more about economy fighting economy. Who can crank out the most shit, you know?
Well, the reason that we keep the military that we keep isn't because we need it or even because we really use it, because a lot of the stuff that we're paying for is not even that, like was it the B-52s or B-57s, I don't know what it was, that they were still making that they didn't even use, but they were making them because if they stopped making them, people would lose their jobs.
They'd lose their funding would get cut the next year, so they wasted
right.
money to make sure that they got the
right.
They stopped
same,
making
not,
them
over
the next
couple
years ago, but
it was
a struggle to get rid of them because...
Paint the building again.
Because if you don't maximize
yeah.
your budget, it's like, oh,
well,
you don't need that much?
We're not going to give it to you next year.
Right.
Yeah.
So you have to just keep... I mean, yeah, all of those things are bullshit. All of those things.
So are you guys going to vote for Ron Paul now?
No.
Can I convince anybody? No. See? Yeah.
He won't pick Supreme Court judges I like. So and like you said, he's not king. So he can only vote on legislation that falls on his desk. And all that's going to fall on his desk is a steaming pile of shit anyway. So...
Unless we get a big old Tea Party Congress.
Oh, good God.
Please do not terrify me. Anyway, so voting,
what is wrong
voting,
with the
voting
tea party?
For president,
what's wrong with
the
tea
only
party?
Thing that the only thing that voting for president reliably does is you're voting in a Supreme Court judge, and that person will be there for 20 to 30 years. And that's the only thing that matters. Tea party, go.
I see.
Do you want me to talk about it?
There's issues, sure, but I see more hope for the future in the Tea Party than any other movement happening right now.
Christ. I just see more bullshit.
In terms of like drastic revolutionary changes, like you're talking about, who else is even suggesting
that? I think that
they
had a good idea.
You don't
think
they
got okay? As soon as they got to the point where they don't think their shit stinks, they got too big and they're
to the point. I think they started at that point.
Maybe they started at the point where their shit
don't
stink.
What specifically are you referring to?
They lost the whole idea. Okay, the Tea Party began with like three main focuses, right? It was they were pissed off about, what were they pissed off about? Taxes?
You're making this presumption that the Tea Party is some sort of well-led, organized. It's not. It's an incarnation of.
What's the difference in your mind between Tea Party and Occupy Wall Street?
I meant to blog about this.
I actually like the Occupy people better than...
Really? I do too, but I'm surprised that you're saying that.
I thought the Occupy
I think
people
that both
were like
have,
the ones
I think
like
the
shitting
Occupy
on cars
people.
And raping people.
Oh, they are. They are. I think that... But the purity of their ideas, I think, has a little bit more merit than the Tea Parties.
There's idiots
and
in
I
both
think,
groups.
And I think that the Occupy people are... I think that the Occupy people
I think they're identical. They just happen to have...
unrest that is more universal than what the Tea Party represents.
I think from a lot of... In a lot of ways, the Tea Party people and the Occupy Wall Street people are both vaguely aware that shit is fucked up.
Yes.
And they just haven't quite figured out
what it is,
who to blame, how to unfuck the shit up, and they've chosen different targets for their ire. But I think that they both just have this the same correct general vague notion that shit ain't cool.
I think
that's
that the problem that I have is I agree that there is some contingent of the Tea Party that is more worried about economics than anything else. I do think that there's the other contingent that is more like, I remember the 50s and 60s where there were more white people and things were more normal and people didn't have piercings.
I think that's just because of the websites that you read. I think
you don't think that there is that vein? You don't think that there is that element?
I think what you are saying right now is being reinforced by the websites that you read.
Okay. Well, I'm open to that possibility. It's just my impression that the Tea Party looks back and says, we want things to be like they used to be, and Occupy Wall Street is more forward-looking, like, how do we evolve? I could be wrong. And I know that some of it's bullshit. Some of what Occupy Wall Street people say is complete bullshit, like, I don't want to pay my student loans. Okay, I get that college is overpriced now, but
well,
you took
out
the
loan,
pay it.
Well, I think what Occupy does, that the Tea Party didn't do, was the Occupy people pointed out failings outside the government. Occupy was more focused on like the big banks,
right?
Where there are huge problems in the big banks and lobbyists.
The
and that
problem
kind of,
is
like,
the
giant
relationship that government has,
yes,
with the big banks.
Yes, yes, yes.
Well,
they're married.
True.
They are
but,
one and
but
the same.
You'll at least agree that the Tea Party did not talk about
get
that.
On that. No,
they
because they
that
had to stay
because the lobbyists
free market oriented.
Right, right.
The lobbyists. What Tea Party lobbyists?
No, not Tea Party lobbyists. What I'm saying is that the Tea Party didn't attack lobbyists. Like
the Tea Party isn't a thing. I mean, just like Occupy Wall Street isn't necessarily a thing.
No, but you're missing
the central
sort of like
concepts that people agreed on.
My point was just that the Tea Party was more focused on government.
I don't even think a lot of this is coming from just even the Daily Show and Colbert Report and stuff, but when they interviewed some of these guys, they were doing like the little snaps or wiggle finger things, but they didn't have any actual ideas of what was fucked up. They were just like, shit's fucked up, let's go scream about it. And then after being out there for a few months, things started to congeal, and they sort of got like an agenda, sort of, I don't know.
I think that we should exchange links. Probably on our whatever our site's going to be, blog, whatever you want to call it, and you can put forward to me some Tea Party points of view
see, like,
that are not xenophobic, that are
I want to make this point that the Tea Party people, I think, were mostly pissed off about just big government, and they did not recognize the things that were bad about big corporations.
There's
big
a website
Wall
called
Street.
Big Government. Right?
Yeah, I think that's one of the Dana Lash
there's
pages.
There's no big Wall Street. There's no
big
bank.
Big journalism, excuse me. I think
there's two. There's several big something websites.
So you're saying that the Tea Party was against big journalism?
Big government. It was aimed at government and the left-wing media, but
I think what I'm just trying to say is that if both of them are valid, the Tea Party focused on big government, whereas the Occupy people focused on the big bad things about capitalism. Now, we're smart enough to recognize that the two are married, but most people aren't. That's the point I want to make. That big corporations are just as bad.
I don't even think they're in bed together.
System.
I think the government is a puppet of corporations. That's a lot. Lobbyists write the legislation. Government just executes.
Well, I think that a Tea Party person is more likely to be like, get out of the way of big corporations. Let them do whatever they want.
They already do whatever they want.
Well, but do you see do you see the point that I'm trying to make?
Yeah, no,
I don't know if you really can say that, because I don't know if you really even know that, because I don't know that about the Tea Party, and I feel like I pay more attention than you do.
Well, that's if the Tea Party was against big corporations, you would know it.
Get out of the way of business and capitalism.
Exactly.
You don't think that is a strong central message of theirs?
Get out of the what's wrong with, because they
I view the Tea Party as libertarian. I view the Tea Party as liking probably Ron Paul more than any other right now. I mean, if the Tea Party had to throw their support behind one person,
no
I feel like
way.
It would be Ron Paul.
No way.
Why?
Now what? Because who have they come
that's,
out
that
for?
That was my view. I don't know. They're not an entity that comes out for people.
But they became an entity. They might not have been that in the beginning, but as soon as they got big, they became an entity.
That's why Dana Lash quit. There was a something or other, a big Facebook, and it made some of the Daily Show stuff too, about a couple Tea Party people in Tennessee wanted to remove like slavery or something from some textbooks. Because they didn't want to tarnish the reputation of the founding fathers, whatever. Now, that wasn't the Tea Party. That was like 12 douchebags that happened to belong to the Tea Party
that happens
in Tennessee.
On every subject and everything, and everybody knows that. But okay, if you look at
the Tea Party doesn't have that snake doesn't have a head you can cut off.
It does have a few heads.
No,
there are people who
it evolved to have heads.
Who
specifically naming people? You know, like.
There are some people that are in Congress now because the Tea Party because of Tea Party swell.
There was the big event that they had in Washington it was fallish, September 2010 maybe, that they had an event where there was like, I don't know, 100,000 people on the mall in Washington. They had speakers there. They had and there were certain things that were talked about, their speakers talked about, that everybody cheered for. Now, if a speaker's talking about something and everybody cheers for it, in this group of the Tea Party, couldn't you argue that that is a central view of theirs or
an agreed-upon view? What do they cheer for?
I'll have to go back and look to tell you exactly.
Were they cheering the murder of kittens? What were they cheering for?
The general idea is, or the things that I have absorbed, is that government is too big. Government is the problem. If you reduce government and let business do whatever they want and let private citizens do whatever they want, the world will be perfect. It will right itself.
Right.
And you were just saying that you didn't think that that was accurate. Everything that I've heard from every angle about the Tea Party says that. And that is libertarian. What are you talking about? You said it's more libertarian bent. That is a libertarian bent.
There's a difference between capitalism and crony capitalism. There's a difference between... I mean, and me personally, I don't even believe in raw, unfettered capitalism. I think that no matter what the system is, whether it's pure socialism or pure capitalism, the problem is assholes. How are you going to handle the assholes?
Yeah.
How are you going to handle the lazy assholes that don't pull their own weight in socialism? And when it comes to capitalism, how are you going to handle the greedy assholes that game the system and take advantage of stuff? Which system is better at dealing with assholes? Personally, I think the capitalist system is better at dealing with assholes than the socialist system is. But I would be totally fine with mostly capitalism with some socialist restraint on capitalism.
I was talking to one of my friends one time about this, and we were discussing this very topic, and we came up with the concept of social capitalism, where it's socially you come up with rule, because basically if you have unfettered capitalism, there are no rules, and so you just come up with clever ways to steal. So
right.
Social
obviously that's
has
bullshit.
To be like social consciousness
okay.
with
we're,
capitalism.
We're running a little bit short on time, okay. and I didn't mean to interrupt you, but next week when we do have a little bit more time, I do want to talk about the correlation between economics and economics and whether or not people are innately good or innately bad.
Which, by the way, if you're really pissed off about the revolving door between Wall Street and government and academia, look at, I mean, who's in Obama's cabinet right now? They're all a bunch of ex-Wall Street assholes.
My uncle and several other people will send me emails complaining about Barack Obama. And I tell them this. I said, I am not happy. I am unhappy for completely different reasons than you're unhappy. And what you just said is one of the reasons that I'm unhappy. Obama is Bush light to me. Light is even being generous. Like,
this is exactly why I was.
Did you see the movie that Matt Damon narrated? Inside Job?
No, I meant to see that. I did see, what did I watch?
Watch Inside Job. I watched
Casino Jack.
I watched Inside Job expecting, as a conservative, to be like, okay, this is probably just going to like piss me off a lot. And some of it did. Some of it was like, no, yeah, that's fucked up. That's not cool. And I was totally on the side of the narrator. And they talked about how anybody investigating some of these subprime mortgages and the derivatives, and all, it was so ridiculously complex that if a journalist actually was like, hey, I figured out what you're doing and it's bullshit, they're like,
they
really?
Hire them.
Would you like a job?
Yep. I read Here's The Big Short, yeah. which has pretty much said the same thing. They said anybody who knew what was going on, who was that smart.
They're like, would you like to make $5 million a month?
Yep.
Because we'll hire you.
Yep.
Now, what was the Michael Moore movie that was about?
Capitalism, a Love Story.
Yeah. Same thing.
I about
Did
half
you see it?
Yeah, and yeah. I went into it thinking, oh man, I'm just gonna get mad at this whole movie.
He does some great interviews.
Some of his stuff is just
yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah, I think he gets distracted.
But then he gets.
I will agree that
he lets his hatred for Republicans get in the way of his journalism.
And I will agree that his choice of information that he chooses to include is sometimes skews things, but what he gets on film is sometimes, very insightful.
Yeah, it is very insightful. The problem is Michael Moore, just himself.
Yeah, no, there have been several left-leaning documentaries or movies that have been put out lately that I went into it thinking, all right, I'm going to watch this just so I know what the other side's thinking, blah, 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 blah. But I was like, no, yeah, that's messed up. That's not cool. And I don't think most conservatives would think that's cool either. And that's the problem, too, is it really is being, like, if you want to talk about big evil corporations, sure they exist. I'm not going to say they don't exist, but they exist on both sides. It's not just a bunch of, big oil people giving to some Texas senators, and then that's causing all the problems.
Oh, well, and I think for next week we should print out.
SOPA was a perfect example of that. That it was this is me having three beers. Legislation introduced by the entertainment industry, and it just, they said, here, pass this because we give you money.
And unions donate heavily.
Right.
Heavily.
Teachers union.
The teachers
is
union.
one that will not be touched.
There's like four or five different teachers unions.
Little Miss,
aren't there?
I don't want to screw with the Department of Education.
I didn't say I didn't want to screw with it. I want to screw with it a lot. I think we need one. I think we need federal standards. Because that's the only way to keep the playing field equal.
And the EPA, if we can, I don't know if we can compare the EPA to the teachers union or not, I don't know. But in terms of abolishing bullshit organizations, I think the EPA is one.
Who started the EPA?
On both sides. I don't know.
Was it a Democrat?
Was it Roosevelt? I don't even know.
It was Nixon.
It was Nixon?
I believe.
I don't care.
I could be wrong, and then I'll feel really dumb.
What difference does it make who started it?
But anyway, so...
Things can be started with the best of intentions, and then they become something else completely.
Okay, fair enough. But my point is that it's demonized, but in the 1970s, it was not thought of as like some awful liberal plot to have an EPA.
Well, but it's not even a liberal... Or
it's not...
I was watching this documentary about the bees that are dying. We're losing like 30% of our bee population or whatever. And part of it is because the EPA is doing a shit job of regulating that industry. They're doing a horrible job. So from a liberal, lefty, hippie point of view, the EPA is not doing their job.
But if you got rid of it, then the bees would still die. Right? So it's not get rid of it, it's reform it.
It's smash it and start over.
Okay, smash it and start over, but put something else in its place that is... has the same original ideals.
That is small and answerable to the people.
Sure.
Like one of the things they talked about in this documentary, the EPA doesn't do any of their own studies. Like, say a chemical company is producing this pesticide that is killing a bunch of bees, and someone raises a complaint about it. The EPA goes to that chemical company and says, do some research for us and put some reports together. So the chemical company itself does its own research.
I completely agree. That's jacked up.
And then submits it to the EPA, and the EPA can say, oh, that's not good enough, come back with something else.
No.
But eventually, they do rely on the research provided by their... It's not independent.
No,
it's not third party.
No one on this planet would say that that's a good idea. Most people don't realize it's happening or even care to pay enough attention to
it. But if I'm giving tax money to the EPA, that's what I want them to be. I want them to be a third-party person that does their own research.
Nobody thinks that's a good idea, though. Nobody thinks that's a good idea.
Sure, and that's more from, like I said, that's more from a left-wing point of view. That's more from a, there are bees dying, there are monocultures out there that are just, why isn't the EPA doing a better job? It's not about getting in the way of business. The EPA isn't doing its job.
I will agree. This is why I'm glad we're doing this. I think Republicans, Democrats, liberals, conservatives agree on more than they disagree on. Honestly, it is.
So we all love bees.
I love bees. But I was also trying to sort of wrap things up, and since I know we need to stop soon.
We have a little bit of time still.
Oh, good. Sorry.
We have some time. What else do we want to talk about?
You want to bullshit for a while? Get out of heavy policy land?
I do next week, honestly, want to talk about economics and whether or not people are innately good or evil. And
how are those related?
Well,
because you can be... Because there could be evil people who take advantage of...
See, I one of the segments I wanted to have tonight was I wanted to talk about what informs your politics. Like, why do you think you're a liberal? Why do I think I'm a conservative? I think that most liberals believe that humans are fundamentally bad, and most conservatives believe that humans are fundamentally good. That's been my personal observation. That if men and women left to their own devices, will be greedy assholes, according to liberals. Whereas conservatives think men and women left to their own devices will be charitable.
I think that both ways of thinking assume that everyone is mostly evil. I think that liberals try to...
See, I don't assume that most people are evil. I assume most people are good.
I think that liberals try to prevent people from being evil. Conservatives say, it's already going to be fucked. Everybody's going to, you know, there's no way to get around it. Let's just protect yourself and save your own money and screw everybody else.
I think what both sides fails to recognize is the truth in the other side. One of the things... What I wanted to say a little bit earlier was that the right or conservatives or Republicans or whatever, they champion Ronald Reagan. I mean, they're just like, Ronald Reagan is wonderful, blah, 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 blah. Okay. There's this quote.
He is higher than Jesus on
the
scale.
Oh, yeah, he is.
Not the thinking
on the
ones.
Scale?
The thinking ones.
No, but I just want to
talk
wanna
about
say,
Jefferson.
Well, that's fine. But Ronald
Jefferson
Reagan said this one
slaves.
Thing that I think is really a...
and he fucked them all the time.
Wait, what were you saying? Because I thought I had something. I thought I had a good response.
I wanted to quote Ronald Reagan because I think it's a really interesting quote. He said something to the effect of, and I'm not going to say it.
The ham was good.
I'm done.
No, I want to hear it, Dennis. Stop talking about the ham. What do you want to say? Do it.
Well, we're kind of out of time, but what I wanted to say was, there's this. What he says is, democracy can't exist without God. Like, true. Hold on. Wait. Before you. To cancel out the word God. What he was saying
eyebrows
was
hitting the hairline.
Whoa.
A higher power.
Not a higher power, not necessarily. Something, what he was saying was that capitalism, pure capitalism, will fail unless we love each other.
Fair enough.
And socialism will fail unless
and
we love
socialism
each other.
Because everybody would just sit home and say, send me a check.
Everybody, that's what I said earlier. You got. How do you deal with the assholes that don't do what they're supposed to do?
I don't know.
If everyone's a saint...
That's why there is a discussion. If everyone was good, there wouldn't be discussion.
Socialism assumes everybody's
no
a saint. Capitalism assumes everybody's a saint.
Politics at all.
And the fact of the matter is that evil exists. So what do we do with that? And I'll elaborate on that next week.
Well, I think if we have a proper social mechanism in place to stigmatize the evil...
I think we're at war.
Guilt tripping? That's a very Catholic approach.
There's something to being a good businessman.
Did I really piss you off with the word God, didn't I? You're like, oh, well, fuck Catholicism.
Well, no, that's just saying that people who, if there's no God, then you're going to be an evil business person or, whatever.
Well, that's why immediately after I said it,
she's talking more about the concept.
I wanted to immediately say that I'm not necessarily take the word God and change it to whatever you want to change it to, whether
conscience,
that word,
morals, ethics.
Well, yeah, change it to, I think an easier thing to think about is just the word love, and it's generic altruism kind of thing. Like, democracy can't exist without altruism. That's as generic as you can possibly get.
And I know you're sort of more advanced. I don't know if advanced is the word, but not literal biblical interpretation of God. But this is our first podcast.
We
not everybody knows
God.
That. I had to slow the train down.
Yeah,
for
and
that
that's
purpose.
Yeah, no, and I'm
Make
no,
you
I'm glad you
it.
Did because I just yeah, but it'll fail unless there is some kindness.
Mm-hmm.
Jefferson believed that we had a duty. The charity was a duty.
Obligation.
An obligation that was a part of us. That we didn't, if we saw a poor person on the street, it was our duty.
Oh, but if you hear a conservative quote Jefferson, it's everybody's going to, you know, live
law free. What conservative are you talking about? The conservatives that get quoted on your little filtered website.
You know what? I listen to 97.12 and they break out. Oh, yeah.
You should stop listening to 97.1.
Well, you listen to it?
Not as a source of information.
I listen. I don't listen to it as a source. I listen to it as a, like you listen to, like you watch MSNBC. Like, what are people who vehemently disagree from me saying?
Even when I listen to 97.1, it's not because I'm getting my marching orders from them. They're just on talking about the news of the day. I still gather most of my stuff from the internet or reading a bunch of different articles.
Okay.
I guess the point is, why does the government have to be the one to step in? I think part of the problem is we have depersonalized charity. We think, oh, we should give extra money to the government because the government will then give it to the poor people. And so we never have to deal with those dirty, nasty, smelly poor people ourselves. We just give the money to the government, and they take care of them for us. We don't get our hands dirty. We don't go, and if our neighbor's unemployed, we don't say, hey, you can come paint my fence, or hey, you can crash on my couch for a while.
Ironically.
We keep them at arm's length.
If it's all charity, who's going to give to the charity of the potholes? You know,
I
like,
will say this,
like,
though.
People want to give to...
But potholes are a basic function of government. Yes, potholes, military, cops, firefighters, roads, of course.
But the government is looking at it from the perspective of all the things that society needs.
To get gritty and actually help the poor. Is it the rich conservatives who are having galas and dinner auctions? Or is it the liberals who are helping Habitat for Humanity actually build houses? I mean,
I don't think that's fair to draw too much of a distinction.
I think that there's...
You want to talk about the right-wing Christians that are pilgriming places? I mean, come on.
No, but what I'm saying is I don't think that we're having an accurate conversation right now.
And you want to talk about the rich people like the Andrew Carnegies that end up becoming giant
philanthropists? No, but what you were saying about duty is I think that it's more likely that like rich conservatives have this, you know, absolutely, you know, we have a duty to do da 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 and help the poor and blah 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 blah. But who are the people that are getting down and dirty? Like, who are these conservatives that are getting dirty with the poor? That they go to they volunteer at a soup kitchen once a year and they feel all good about themselves and they go to a trivia contest?
Talking about the difference between charity, private charity, and the government.
I'm talking about that it's the same thing.
No, it's not.
I absolutely think it's the same thing. Big, not touchy, whether it's government or whether it's big Catholic charities. I think
Catholic charities are just as bad. What I was talking about was more of a sign of the times, not necessarily a difference between Republicans and conservatives. I don't think I actually made that point, that we have somehow, like, Republicans and conservatives are more or less likely to get their hands dirty. I don't remember saying that.
Well,
for one.
You made it sound like, in my opinion, that Republicans were more duty conscious.
I said Jefferson was.
Okay.
I said the concept of... I think a good example is this Komen controversy that just happened. You give your money to an organization, and you trust it to do what you want it to do, but maybe it gives it to somebody else, or who knows what it's going to do with it. You are a better judge of what you are going to do with your own money than any organization.
Well, I think that,
and it's more easy to hold.
Like to say
it's
that,
more easy to hold a private charity accountable for what they do than it is the government. The government can take your money and spend it on the Iraq War, and if you're against the Iraq War, that sucks.
I guess what I'm saying is that it seems to me that conservatives say that, but then they do is trade a government charity for a big government terribly run charity for a big privately run terrible charity.
Well, not necessarily. And for one
that's
thing,
what happens.
We don't even know. We don't even.
Well, the problem is that you're choosing government who tries to address several things versus one charity who addresses one thing. And if you have so many charities that only have tunnel vision for one thing, that's. I mean, somebody's going to lose out.
I guess what I'm saying is maybe for the left, the government is their church. is their way of doing big charity.
Right, and that's flawed thinking.
Well, but what I'm saying is
why?
It's wait, because this is what I'm saying, exactly. Why you're pissed, because it's...
Because the government
because
will never do as good of a job.
Disagree. The Catholic Church won't do as good as a job, do as good a job as you helping your neighbor. That's my point.
Well, that's
that,
true, too.
That conservatives have simply traded government for their Christian church.
But you voluntarily give to charities. The government takes it from you without your choice.
Well, it depends on what church you belong to. I mean, granted, like, you're not going to get arrested for not
tithing
going...
Tithing is expected
right,
in a lot of churches.
Right. And granted, you're not going to get arrested for not tithing, but you're going to be...
Tithing is still 10%. Who pays a 10%
tax?
It's over.
Well, a lot of people pay 10% tax.
Last call.
Like Mitt Romney.
I'd be here.
I bet your effective tax rate is something like 6% or something.
It's a little higher than that, but not by much. It's less than 15.
Right, but I mean, and I don't know how good you are at taking advantage of all the things you're allowed to take.
Well, once upon a time I did, but now I don't because I don't own a house. I don't have hardly any loopholes. But anyway,
and that's get rid of the loopholes. I don't like this podcast.
I think we can make something of it. We can do it.
I don't know. I don't like it.
I think we did fine.
I think the second half was certainly a lot better than the first half.
Honestly,
I don't know.
After last week,
you were
I
being
started,
really stupid second half.
I'm really pissed off about so many things.
And
what the tea party
I feel mad because I don't. I mean, if I had like the facts in front of me, I could do better because we did. But I didn't.
I know. That's why I said I wanted to prepare.
Some of the tea party, some of this like Catholic charities being bullshit or whatever.
Catholic charities are bullshit.
I think they are to a certain extent,
but. There's differences.
How?
Well, you're focusing too much on the religion aspect. There's plenty of religions or there's plenty of charities that are private that aren't religious based.
Oh, I know.
And if your charity is disappointing you, you can say
that. She was just saying that anything can be mismanaged and
of course
bloated
anything can be mismanaged
and fucked up by bureaucracy.
But when you've got a bureaucracy, it's a self-sustaining bureaucracy. You can have people who get money from the government vote to keep that
right. But what I'm trying to get
hose.
What I'm trying to get
that's
across
attached
is
to their in place.
What I'm trying to get across is that the left, we call them rights, call them the left, whatever.
I don't know. You lost me with that whole like nobody wants to get their hands dirty except the Habitat for Humanity people because obviously they're all liberals. No Christians ever do that.
My point...
There's sibling stuff coming out
right
now.
I don't think that liberals get enough credit for... how do I want to phrase this? The government acts as the religion for... I don't want to call them the left, but that's what they are, the left. The government acts as their religion, where the conservatives act like... Our church is our religion, but they're both doing the same types of things, and they're both doing them poorly.
I've never questioned, and this is actually one of the things that frustrates me about some of the Democratic friends that I've had, I have never questioned whether or not a Democrat's heart is in the right place. I believe that their heart's in the right place. I think that their priorities and their emphasis and their logic doesn't necessarily line up with my own, but I have never accused them of having their heart in the right place, whereas frequently... liberals will tell me that I'm evil or I'm disgusting or that my heart isn't in the right place.
See, but I think that conversation is just like the difference between like what the Baptists think of the Catholics.
During the healthcare debates and stuff, I saw Facebook posting about how like Republicans just want all the sick people to die. Really? Is that really what you think? That we just want the sick people to just die and get out? I mean, you know what I mean? Really?
I'm just saying that if you're going to open up the conversation, you have to see it from their point of view, too. And from their point of view, the government is like their religion. And so they can't understand why. They can't, just like you couldn't understand why, like, if you are a Catholic, why you there wouldn't be a Catholic charity organization within
but I think
your
that's,
church.
I think that's a failure. That's just a failure of
that's
education,
fine, but
intellect,
you have
and
to
understanding.
Get into
that's
that,
not
you
a
have to get into the person's, you have to get into their perspective. You have to get into their shoes to understand what
and
they
I'm
think
capable
in order.
Of doing that.
Sometimes
I
agree with you both, and I think right now I disagree with you both, and I would have to go on a point-by-point basis to figure out why, but... Well, I, on one hand, I disagree because I think there's plenty of liberals who go to, you know, cocktail parties for, you know, Sierra Club or whatever and just write a check. Like, I don't think that the, like you said, it's not just liberals doing Habitat for Humanity and then
I'm just
conservatives
adopting
going
to have a conversation.
Fashionably social.
Yeah.
It's social event to go, hey, let's all, like, save the seals together.
I don't think that there's a distinction in that hands-on way, but I do, in a way, like, the church thing is, it also bothers me just because I think it's not fair to say that all liberals don't put that emphasis on religion, but I do think most liberals do not want to leave caring for the poor entirely in the hands of their church because it's just not going to be as broad and it seems like more efficient for the government to do it.
Isn't the fear that if the government doesn't help the poor, that humanity will abandon them? Isn't that the fear? That if it weren't for the government, humanity itself would have just let the poor rot.
Not consciously abandon them, but that it'll just be sort of cherry-picked on, well, we're going to help these people, but we're not, you know.
And I believe, I honestly believe.
Whether maybe it's let's help rural white people versus inner-city black people, or let's help, you know, pregnant mothers versus crack addicts.
But you don't think
like,
the composite of all put together will eventually everybody get taken care of?
No, I think that there would be some charities that are more, you know, oh, well, this is the sad puppy charity, and this is the, you know, guy who was in jail for 20 years, and even though he did something shitty and he served his time, you know, he still needs help in some way, shape, or form, but nobody really wants to give to the 20-year felon charity. Everybody wants to give to the sick puppy charity. So there's going to be favoritism, and certain things are going to get way more funding than they need, and then certain things are not. And then what happens to this guy? What are his choices in life? Does he just go away? No, he doesn't go away. He has to get a job somewhere. He has to function in society, or he will have no choice, and then he will rob somebody, and then there are going to be repercussions of that in society. So government says we're going to have a blind eye. We're going to make sure that we see all of these needs and give to them as much as they need to be. The sick puppy charity is not going to get all this extra attention just because it's cute and just because they're babies and, you know, like, let's help them. Like, we're going to help everybody equally and make sure that there's the net that's all-encompassing, if that makes sense.
Well, it makes some sense. I'm just not convinced that we would be that cold.
That's a big question. All right, do we need to have an ending
for this one?
I think this should be our first one because we can have set low expectations. And because they're closing here, so let's go. Okay.
I'm Dennis, I'm the best.
All right, Jen, bye.
Bye.
I'm assuming you will cut this little part out.
Oh, that whole thing,
cunt,
you think?
Bitch, fuck, slut, cock.